All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last day of Tech Ed. I know this will be good news for some of you because of all the information overload this week, and for others, it might be sad news because you want even more information. But either way, we will give you more information. That's what we're here to do. So the information that we'll give you should match the information that you're expecting to receive. So let's do some level setting there. As you can see on the title, this is about Windows Phone 8.1. Not 8.0, but 8.1. And it is about XAML apps, but that's not Silverlight apps or WPF. It's the new XAML programming model that we've introduced for Windows Store apps and recently announced it's also available for Windows Phone 8.1. And in order to target these new XAML apps in Windows Phone 8.1, you need the latest Visual Studio version, specifically Visual Studio 2013 Update 2, which was just released on Monday, the RTM version of it. So that's kind of some setting on what this is about. So if that's not what you're expecting, feel free to use your time elsewhere. And it's also about diagnosing issues. So not building. We're assuming you know how to build these, or you can go find out how to build these. And here we'll talk about how you find issues in those kinds of apps. So let me check. How many people in here have actually built or are building a Windows Phone 8.1 XAML app? Can I have a show of hands? OK, that's half of you. And how many people have built or are building a Windows Store app using the XAML programming model? Can I have a show of hands of that? So that's most of you. So people that didn't put your hand up at all, I guess you're thinking about writing apps, right? Some nods from the people that didn't put their hands up. So you're thinking about writing apps, and you just want to see also what the diagnosing thing is. So that's what we'll do. Now, you can see on the slide two names. So this is a session of two halves. The second half will be done by my colleague Andrew Hall, and he will be talking about how to find performance issues using the profilers. And the first half will be done by me, Daniel Moth, and I'll be showing you with a debugger how to identify correctness issues. So how many people, I'm curious, were in my session on Monday on debugging tips and tricks? Can I see a show of hands for that? OK, so about a third of you, I guess. So like I said there, I'll be repeating here a small subset of those tips. But I'll also be throwing in topics that are specific to phone, because phone and tablet have some specific aspects to them, such as suspend and resume. So you know, how do you debug that? So we'll be talking about those. And I'll also include some things that are just brand new in Visual Studio 2013 that are applicable on other platforms, but also on phone. So that's basically what we're going to go through. That's the agenda for debugging right there. The way I'm going to do that is through a demo. So it's about a 30-minute demo that will go through the various features. I'll show them. And then for each one of these, I have a slide that also details what it is. So you don't need to take notes or try and remember them. You'll see a slide in the deck for each one, which we may go through in this session as well. When I'm done with that, then Andrew will come up, and he'll show you the brand new Performance and Diagnostics Hub, which I'm sure you haven't used if you haven't done any development for store apps or phone. So that's how we're going to do this. Does that work for everyone? Yeah? Let's have some excitement. Does that work for everyone? Yeah, OK. It's fine. It's still the morning. So let's go to the demo. So I have here an app that was actually created by a colleague of mine. So I'm just stealing his app and using it for the debugging demo. And I'll be doing the debugging in the emulator. And what this app does, it's a fairly realistic app. It's a photo filtering app. And you can see in the solution, I have two other projects, a C++ library. We won't be going into that at all for my part of the session. And then there's also a background task, which doesn't do anything, but we'll show you a bit there as well. So in the photo filter app, if I just go and hit F5, it's going to deploy. I can see in the status bar at the bottom, the blue status bar, deploy started. It's going to deploy to the emulator. And when it gets there and we're debugging, that status bar is going to turn orange as usual, because we're debugging. And then I look at my app, and it's supposed to take images. So it takes images from the camera roll. I just have two dummy images over there. So there's nothing wrong with your eyesight. Those colored bars are supposed to be like that. And then I'm also trying to retrieve images from what I've named the cloud, which is basically a server which is actually running on my laptop. So I was expecting to see images there where the blue highlight is, where the cloud is, but I'm not. So question for you, expert debuggers from other types of projects that you do. When you see something in your app that you weren't expecting, or you were expecting to see something and it's not there, what's the first place that you go in the debugger? This is the interactive part you're supposed to answer. XAML page, another answer here. Any others? Output window, yes. So XAML page would be a good one to look at the design. But in terms of diagnosing issues, many people rush to, oh, I'm going to go and put a breakpoint where I think the error might be. Before you even go there, output window is where you want to go. So if we look here in the output window, we'll see some information. And it says a first chance exception of type system argument null exception occurred. So a first chance exception. So for those of you not familiar, or as a reminder for those of you that are familiar, a first chance exception basically means a thrown exception. And what that means is that every exception gets thrown and then hopefully caught and handled. But you get notified by the debugger only when it's unhandled. So you have an opportunity to see in the output window exceptions as they were thrown. The fact that we didn't break in the debugger means this exception was thrown and handled somewhere. So maybe you don't care. But since I saw something unexpected in my app, I do care, and I'm going to use this as a hint that I need to go and find out what's going on. So how do I find out what's going on other than just seeing it there in the output window? Well, what you can do is you can configure the debugger to break on thrown exceptions. So if we go in the debug menu and we use the exception settings dialog, it is in here where I can go and configure what I want to do with exceptions. And by default, thrown is not checked, because you don't want to be breaking every time an exception is thrown. It might be handled nicely, so you don't want that. That will interrupt you. But when you're investigating something like this, you probably do. And I can turn it off here at the root, turn on the thrown exceptions, but I'm going to go for the specific one, system argument null exception, hit OK. And now what I want to do is stop debugging and start again and get notified about this thrown exception and see, is that the reason? Is that what's going on? So typically, this happens quite a bit when we're debugging. We want to stop and start. Instead of hitting stop and start, you can expedite this slightly by hitting the restart. So Control-Shift-F5 will actually stop and start, and it's going to be a little bit faster for you. So that's what I'm doing here. So you see we've stopped because the status bar went blue, and it's going to get orange when we are back in the emulator, which today is not running at full speed, it seems. So now, indeed, you see the dialog that popped up that notifies you of exceptions. By the way, you may be used to seeing another dialog, a whiter one that has a line connecting to the code. That's what we call the exception assistant. I personally don't like that, so I've switched it off from the tools options, and I use the gray dialog. I prefer that. That's just me. Either one serves the same purpose, and every time you see these dialogs, you want to read carefully the first words. If it says a first chance exception, you know that you could continue from here, and you'll recover. It's handled somewhere. So in this case, obviously, I don't. I don't want to continue. I want to break because I'm investigating this. But in general, when you see a first chance exception, you know you could recover. You could continue. If it just says exception or an unhandled exception, then you know that you have a problem. You should definitely break and look at it. So I'm going to go and break here for this first chance exception. And what do you do when you break because of an exception, first chance or otherwise? What's the first thing you do? Where do you go and look? This is another interactive part. Any ideas? Call stack. So one place you go is a call stack and see where did this get thrown. That's exactly right. And that's what I want to do here. Another answer, which is also equally good, is to go into the locals window. And you see here we have this dollar exception, which is what we call a pseudo variable. So we add that there for you. You could also add this to the watch window manually. And that gives you all the details about the exception. So if I didn't want to go to the call stack, and first I wanted to go here if this was a more interesting exception, because exceptions can be interesting or uninteresting. Argument null is an uninteresting one because it's fairly self-explanatory to me. So I can go to the exception, and typically what you would do is go to the inner exception and then see here it's null, so it doesn't matter. Or go to the message, value cannot be null, not very interesting. Or go to the stack trace. But actually, the way I'm going to investigate this one is go to the call stack. So those are the two areas you can go. So when I go to the call stack, which is where we go every time we break and we're like, how did I get here? The answer is, I'm going to look at the call stack. And notice that this function is using async. How many people here have used async await, the async await pattern? Show of hands. OK, so not everybody. So this is something that is, if you develop device apps in particular, it also applies to desktop apps and server apps. But if you develop device apps, you'll find that you have to use everywhere. And as soon as you use one of them, it's very infectious. It spreads in your code base. So that's the async program model. You can read about that elsewhere, but how do you debug it? When you get to these situations in previous versions of Visual Studio before 2013, you would see where you are, so the top stack frame. Then you would see the resume async method, which tells you you're resuming an async continuation. And then maybe you'd see external code, and that would be it. So now, as of VS 2013, we support async a bit better in the call stack window by stitching together a logical stack. So the real call stack actually stops where I've highlighted, but we're stitching it together and showing you a logical stack of where you really came from, which means I can go here and see the image load item, and then it says here the annotated stack frame, async call. So from here, I asynchronously called this other function further up. So I could go and inspect this, you know, and see, okay, I've got a null here, so maybe this is where I want to be. Actually, I've done this investigation earlier, so I went further up. This didn't look very interesting. I went further up, and you see how we stitched them all together. And then here is where I found the interesting part. You see where it's got catch exception, and all it does is debug write line? This is where we're swallowing that exception. So I found the place, and indeed, when I look at the image item, it is null. So then I would go and look at the descriptor, and so on and so forth. So at this point, I think I found the area where I want to investigate further. And I could continue on this path, but what I'll do is I want to break before the issue happens. So I could put a breakpoint here and then go and hit restart debugging, and then we'd break there before the exception happens so I can inspect even more, right? So I won't do that, just so I can show you, you know, just something else as well, which is you don't have to put a breakpoint if all you're going to do is temporarily you want to break somewhere. You can also start debugging, so I've stopped debugging now. You can start just by right-clicking and saying run to cursor when you find the location of interest. So when you do that, you'll see now deploy started on the status bar, so it's starting debugging again, and we'll go break on that line for me without me having to set a breakpoint. And I try to avoid sometimes setting breakpoints if I can, because I usually forget to remove them, and then I hit them later on, and they confuse me. So here we are broken on line 120 without having had to set a breakpoint, and by starting our debugging by run to cursor. So combining two actions, start and break together. So now I'm here. So I want to investigate this. So I look at the descriptor, and I can see file name is null. Okay, so where does this come from? Well, the descriptor was created here, and the file name was null. Where did the file name come from? Well, it came from this. I'm hovering, nothing is happening. That's interesting. So there's some stuff in here. Where does the image come from? Oh, from this picture list. And where is this? Oh, it's a dynamic array. That's probably why that wasn't working, which comes by deserializing an object from result. So what's result? A result is the result of making a network call here. So I'm following up to see where is the root cause, where did this happen. So the result, as I can see here in the data tip that popped up, it looks like JSON, and inspecting that here is not going to be pretty. And if I go and use the visualizer, then the text visualizer, that doesn't help much either. So unwrapping it will just create a single long line rather than a wrapped one, so that doesn't help. And that is why we have added, you can go and drop down here on the magnifying glass, we have added the JSON visualizer. So when you choose the JSON visualizer, then you get a prettier thing. And what I'm looking for here is that image name that I was using to verify that it exists. So I do image name and search, and no results came back. So it doesn't exist. So I think I know what's going wrong here. And as I expand these three items, which represent images clearly, I can see that it's name, not image name. So I found my bug. So this is where I should have made that be name, not image name. So what I want to do now is stop debugging, fix the bug, and start again to verify it. And I'll just gratuitously show you another little feature here. So file name is what I want to look at when I think I fixed this. So I get the data tip, and you see here the little pin at the end? That's because you can pin data tips. So if I click this, we now have this data tip pinned, and I can move it around, I can inspect other things at the same time. And I can see that it says null. I can go and add a comment and say here, shouldn't be null, for example, or something like that. And the reason you would do add comments and go to that extent of using them is because you can go to the debug menu and export data tips so someone else can import them, and you can share kind of like debugging information that way. So the reason I've pinned it here is because we are here in a loop. And many times I see people hitting a breakpoint in a loop, hovering to inspect, F5, hit it on the next iteration, hover again. So instead of doing that, just pin the item, and then you just F5, and you can see it updating live. And I'll show you that right now. So if I go and stop debugging here, you can see the pin is still there. So if I hover over it, I can see the value from the last debugging session. And I'm going to go here and fix this by deleting the image part. and run it up again. So let's put a breakpoint also so we can actually hit it. So hit a 5, and now we're going to go hit that breakpoint, and we want to see the value of file name. And because I pinned the value from my previous debugging session, that will just automatically appear there for me to inspect. And there we are. So I can see here now that the file name is serverimage1.jpg. So already I know I've made good progress. Then I hit a 5. It goes around the loop again. Now it's serverimage2. I'll hit a 5. It goes around the loop, serverimage3. So it saves me that going and hovering. So that was only 3 images we saw in the JSON. So now if I continue, it's just going to go and run. So let's do that. So F5, and now I'm getting my pictures back. So I fixed this bug by turning on first chance exceptions and using the async call stack, navigating back. We show data tips, the JSON visualizer, run to cursor to start up quickly, restart debugging to start up quickly, and then pin data tips for verifying that I had fixed it, and finally looking at the result. So now I see, such as our life is as developers, I fixed one bug, now I notice another, which is I've got the images, but I don't have text. I was expecting to see the file name right next to those. So I was expecting something to happen, and it didn't happen. So where do I go look? The output window, right? You've learned this by now. So we go to the output window to see what's over there, what's hiding. So we go to the output window, and I can see that we don't have those first chance exceptions. And I see here error binding path error. So what you can do, by the way, is you can, when you have a lot of stuff here, you can just take it out and maximize it so you can read better if you want. Or with the output window, you can just hit Control S, and it will just prompt you to save it directly to a text file if you want to go and share that or look at it offline. So in this case, I can see that there is an image name property. Oh, I can see what's going on here. I fixed the bug in code. I probably need to do the same thing in the XAML. So I already have a clue, but when I go and look at it further, I can get even more details of it, such as it's a text blocks element, and it's the target properties text, and we already saw the image name is what it's complaining about. Once you've brought a window out and maximized it, people don't do that because they're like, how the heck am I going to get it back in to the editor? And you can just control double click, and it goes back to where it belongs. So that's a little tip for you in VS. So now I know I can go and fix that binding issue. But what if you wanted to actually break when you have these binding issues? You don't want to be going to the output window. You just want to say, look, my code is really clean. I never have by design binding issues, so I just want to break when this happens. So you can go and add some code that does that for you. So if I go here and stop, I've got some codes up here, which magically is waiting for me commented, so I can uncomment it out. And you can see here I'm saying only when in a debug configuration, and in fact only when the debugger is attached, go and add an event handler for binding failed. And then here on line 52, I have basically a hard-coded breakpoint, debugger.break, so you can go and break there when this happens. So I'm not going to fix the issue and instead show you that if I go and run it, what we'll see now is it will go to the output window for the first binding error, so we will see it there as well, but it will also break so I can get notified more proactively about the issue rather than have to go hunt for it. And here we are on a hard-coded breakpoint, and if I wanted to see the message, I didn't know it was in the output window, I could go on the arguments, data tip expand, and look at it there, and I can see it's exactly the same message. By the way, just another little aside tip, something that I like using, is you see the comments. You know, you can actually put expressions in comments, and when you select them, you can still get a data tip on top of them. So I do that a lot, just leave comments in my code for debuggability, so I got the right expression, so I don't have to go hover and hunt. So it broke here, so now I know what I need to do and go fix it. So I'm going to go to my XAML and go down here and make that name. So this image name has been biting me everywhere. And then we're going to go and run it up, and hopefully now it will be fixed. If you have questions, by the way, you can shout them out as we go, especially since the emulator is being slow today. There we are. So before we move on to show you something else, notice here in the output window, so it's all about the output window today, Notice how it shows here phone IP. So where do you think this is coming from? Is it something the debugger is doing? Be brave. You got a debug write line? Is that what you said? If the emulator did it. No, so I think you said debug write line, which you're right. Yeah, it's a debug write line that I'm using. So if you want to find out if this is program output versus the debugger doing something like the data binding and the first chance exceptions, you can, of course, just go and Control-C and search for it. By the way, Control-F, you can also search in the output window itself. But I'm just going to go and search in my code. So if I do Control-F here and Control-V, I can find debug write line, phone IP, and it was something that my colleague that developed this app put in there so you can know his phone IP address. So the reason I mentioned that, debug write line goes to the output window. Hopefully you knew that one. You know, where do you think these come from? So you might think it seems like the same thing. It's very program specific. So if I go here and do a Control-C, and then I go and Control-F, Control-V, it says red outline, so it hasn't found it. I'll search the entire solution, and it says, you know, it wasn't found. So if I don't have this in a debug write line, how did I get this output over there? And really what I'm leading up to is to show you my fifth favorite feature in VS, which is trace points. How many people here that didn't come to my session know about trace points? Okay, so I think you will like this. So let me go to the location where this is coming from. So over here, you see I've got a funny-looking breakpoint here in the margin. I think you can see it, but I'll zoom in just in case. So it's a diamond-shaped one rather than a circle one, and it has a little white plus in it. So what's going on there? So when you place breakpoints, which I'm sure you all do, did you know you can actually right-click on them, and you can go and do advanced things with breakpoints? And I showed all of these in my debugging tips and tricks session. One of them is that you can go and say when hit. And when you do when hit, you can actually print a message from the breakpoint. So it will break, and it will print a message. And you can configure, as you can read in the dialog, to put a whole bunch of different interesting things. And if you put things in braces, you can see the values for those things. Furthermore, if you check, which is checked by default, the continue execution, that's when it becomes a diamond shape, because it's not even going to break. So you won't even have to continue. So you're inserting debug write line statements interactively without having to pollute your code with it. And you can do it on the fly. So while you're debugging, if you thought, oh, I want to output something here, what would you do? You would have to stop debugging and write debug write line and compose the whole thing. You can just set these on the fly while debugging. You don't have to do them from the start. So that's the trace point that I was using here. So if I say OK, you see it changes its shape. And the fact that it has a plus in it means there's another advanced aspect about it. And that other advanced aspect would be one of the other menu items. So if I go here and say condition, that's where you can also enter a condition and say, only if this condition is true, go and break or take the action, whether it was trace point or anything like that. So I've combined these in the one that I've got here on line 136. So if we look at this, you'll see in the when hit, we say successfully downloaded, and then we use the name, which is the file name, and that's how we see it in the output window. And then what I've also done is I've set a condition on it, which is do this only for the cloud case, which is why we're not seeing the images for the ones I'm getting from the camera roll. Does that make sense? Yeah? Is that a cool feature? I love that. So now you know it, so now you can love it too. So with that, let's go and see some more phone-specific things. Pretty much everything I've shown you here, you can take advantage in your debugging other kinds of apps. The data binding is XAML-specific, but in WPF, you also get data binding reports in the output window. So pretty much everything you can get in other program models. Let's look at some phone-specific things. So is everyone familiar with suspend and resume on the phone or store apps? Who isn't with suspend and resume? OK, a brave soul said the word. So in a nutshell, the phone lets you suspend. It suspends your apps when they're in the background. So if I go here and hit the start button, this app that I just opened has been suspended. And if you have multiple of these, you can go and switch between them by hitting the holding and pressing the back button, and I can see the list of apps. And then when I activate one, that's resuming. So that's something the phone does for you. But you have to write custom logic in your app if you want to do something special. So let's say you navigated to a page, and then when you resume, you want to be on that page rather than start from scratch. You have to do something special in your code. And this session is not about that. You can read what you need to do. It's like, how do you debug that? Because when you're running under the debugger, it will not let the OS suspend your app. And that's a good thing. You don't want, while debugging, your app to be suspended. So you need to have another way of doing it. And that other way of doing it is on the debug location toolbar. So let's see. I'm just going to go and start it up. So here, and while it's starting, can you see here I have this toolbar. It's called the debug location toolbar. Up here, we have the debug toolbar. That's on by default in most profiles. But the other one isn't. So you will need to turn that on. I encourage you to have that for all kinds of debugging. So here, when you right-click, you see debug, debug location. I've checked it. That lets you look at the processes you're debugging, the current threads, and you can switch between it when you're in break mode, and also the same for the stack frame. So real nice, at a glance, where am I, and switch between it. The thing we've added is this thing called lifecycle events. So I have my app running now, and here on the lifecycle events, I can test explicitly. I can take control and be like the OS and say, what happens in my app when I go and hit suspend? So if I go now and hit suspend, I'm making the app suspend. And you can see that I hit a breakpoint that I had preset in my code in the onSuspending function, which is where I do what I think I need to do to behave correctly. So I've hit the breakpoint, which means this code executed fine. So if I continue and we go back to the emulator, we'll see that my app is no longer there. It's been suspended. So if I want to test the resuming, then I can go here and say resume. So now when I hit resume, I don't have a breakpoint set for that, but some of my code has run. And when we look at the emulator, we can see my app is back. Great. Now I want to test this for my other page. I have another page in this app. So when I go and select an image, I go to an image page. So what I want to see is when I resume, when I suspend and resume, do I come back to this page, or has my logic failed? So I'm going to go here and do the same thing. So I'm going to go and choose suspend. And as soon as I choose suspend, already I can see I've got a problem. So an exception dialog came up. You can see from the cursor, it's on line 201. We didn't reach our breakpoints. So there's something wrong when I go to that page. And when we see an exception dialog, what's the first thing we do? We read the beginning. I don't see first chance exception here, so I'm scared. This is a real one. And I can go and see what's going on. So we break. And if I look at the call stack, it's not going to be that interesting in this case. And I know what I did in my app. So I'm going to go to the dollar exception and expand that. And I see there is an inner exception. And I'll expand that. There isn't one after that. So let me look at the message. And of course, I'm going to use the text visualizer since this is a string. And I can go and read here what's going on. And this isn't just to show you this debugging feature. This is actually very common for people writing, coming new to the phone and tablet platforms. Everyone gets bitten by the suspend resume stuff. So knowing how to debug it is important. So you've read the message by now. It says frame navigate. So I'm going to go and copy that and find it in my app, see where that is. So control F, find all, switch to one of them here. And you can see frame navigate, it says type of image, and I'm passing in this descriptor argument, which is an image descriptor. And you saw the error was about serialization. So I have a serialization issue. So I could go on the image descriptor and put a serializable and be done with it. So let me go and look at the image descriptor. So typically the way we go and look at types, how do you go and look at types? Go definition, right? F12. So instead of go definition, I just want to glance at the type. I want to peek at it. So we have this new feature called peek definition, Alt F12. I find I'm using this a lot these days. So when I do that, it just brings an inline little editor where I am so I don't lose my whole context. So here I can go and see this, and I notice, oh, the constructor. There's a constructor that takes arguments. So just the attribute alone is not going to fix it. I'm going to need to actually write code. So I can escape out of this. And then that's not a problem writing code because it's waiting for me right here. I'm sure that's what happens with you. And I hit the delete button, and the message I get is edit and continue, source code changes are not allowed. So unfortunately, those of you familiar with edit and continue, it does not work on the phone. The core CLR on the phone does not support it. So if you are interested in us fixing this and prioritizing it across the multiple teams that would be involved, we have a survey we just put on our blog on edit and continue in general. And one of the options is, yeah, I want you to improve this as opposed to something else. Everything is a trade-off. So so I have to stop debugging in order to fix my bug. Who would have thought? So I go and hit the comment there and comment the other line out. And now what I'm doing is I'm serializing the object manually here as I'm navigating away. I probably have to go somewhere else and deserialize it, but I'll find that out the hard way. So now let me try that repro steps, the repro steps we had earlier. which were to navigate to a picture and then hit suspend. So we can, and then hopefully we're not going to get an exception this time. We'll hit the breakpoint that shows everything worked. So here we are, and I'm going to go and open an image. And in fact, boom, Visual Studio says an exception of invalid cast has happened. So I was expecting this. I just said it earlier. So I have to also deserialize. But that's fine, because the code is here waiting for me. So I can go do that. Sorry? On the compilation? There's no compiler error here. Because it doesn't know, the compiler can't know that this code isn't valid. Right? The code is valid, it's just at runtime there's an issue. Am I understanding your question correctly? Right, so the question is about earlier on when I showed image name, why didn't I get a compiler error? So these are the two different cases. Earlier when I showed the image name, it's a very good question. Why didn't I get a compiler error since it didn't exist? And that's because I was using a dynamic. So with a dynamic language feature, you're going off-road, you get rid of that static compilation. I had exactly the same question when I encountered that first. So that's for that case. For this case, there is nothing invalid in what I'm doing here. I'm saying I want to cast this and assign it to that. That's valid. It just happens that what gets passed in is not castable because I changed the other part of the code, but the compiler can't know that, at least in this age. So now I've fixed this, so if I go and run it, we will get the correct behavior. So let's go and do that. So I have a theory that this is taking so long because I don't have a network connection. That's my theory. So I can go and open the image, and I can go here and choose the lifecycle events and say suspend. And we hit my breakpoint, not an exception, beautiful. And you can see now in the emulator, my app is no longer there. And when I do resume, the app has come up and it is on the right page. I could have had a bug here where it wasn't, then I'd have to go debug that further. So that's that. Let me quickly show you very gratuitously here, since we're on the lifecycle events, the background tasks. You can have on phone pieces of your code running occasionally, so the OS can schedule that. You can read more about background tasks, search phone background tasks, if you're not familiar with them. And the question is, how would you debug them, since you're not in control of launching them? And you can go and trigger them from the lifecycle event. So it will discover the background tasks that you have. So I have one here that doesn't do anything, but when I go and trigger it, you see I've hit the breakpoint that I had in my run background task, which is from this other project down here at the bottom. So if you have background tasks and you want to debug them, just use the lifecycle. That's all there is here. And just opportunistically, I say, remember that debug location toolbar I was mentioning? You can see here we're in a different process. So that piece of code runs in the background task host, and you can switch between that and your main process to debug one or the other. So that's the multi-process debugging there. If I continue, you see we've switched to the other app, the main process. So that was background tasks. I'll show you two more things, and then I'll pass it over to Andrew. So one of the things you can do is you can have your app be a shared target now. So I can go to the photos, for example, and pick a photo, and then click on the share button, and notice how my app appears there. So beyond this session, how you do that, but you can do that. And then when you go and click on it, here I was expecting it to launch my app. So you don't start the app by the user tapping on it. It's just being launched by this photo sharing part. And it was a different entry point into my app, and I'm not seeing what I was expecting to see. So how do you debug that? You can't just hit F5, because F5 starts your app. You want this different entry point. So the way that you do that is you go to your project properties and you check the action that says do not launch but debug my code when it starts. And normally you'd be like, what do you mean when it starts? I'm going to start it. Well, no, it starts by that sharing, so it's a different flow. So now when I go and hit F5, you can see the blue status bar, and we'll see when it becomes orange, that means that the code has been deployed and we're attached, but we haven't started it. We're waiting for something else to start it, so we can go and debug it. So waiting for that status bar to become orange. There we are, but my app is not showing because it hasn't started it. And then I go pick the image, and now I'm going to pick share, and my app, of course, appears. And when I click on it, because I've got the debugger in the picture, we can see it goes breaks. And this time I broke before throwing the exception. I wasn't expecting to be here, basically. And if I look at my logic, I am in the activate, and it's in the photo share target UI that I've created, and it gives me as a parameter what kind of operation it is. And I go look at the operation and say, if it's a bitmap, do my thing. If it's not, I wasn't expecting that. So this wasn't a bitmap. And this was actually a real bug that was encountered in the development of this app. So it turns out that when you do that, you actually get a storage item type. It's not a bitmap because it's already in storage. So if I go and uncomment this code, control KU, and then start again, and remember I've got that project property thing checked, so it's not really going to start the app, so I'm waiting for the orange bar to know that I'm debugging. Then I'll go and click share on the picture, and we should see it working this time instead of giving us a blank screen. So share my app, and we get the screen that was designed for this, and I could do whatever I want to do here. And then if I look in the output window, you'll see the path to that image, which is all that we're doing in here as the last line when it succeeds. So that's how you can debug sharing contracts. How are we doing for time? All right, Andrew says I can do one more. So what I have in here is a C++ library. And in the C++ library, I do filtering over here. So I've got a breakpoint to break when I hit the filter button. And if I go and run this, I'm going to spare you. If I run and try to hit the filter button, we're not going to hit this breakpoint. And that's because when you want to debug two different languages, you need two different debug engines, so you need to ask for those two. So if you go into the project properties where we were earlier, you can go and choose mixed, managed, and native. And just FYI, recently we added support for JavaScript and native as well with VS 2013. So you choose mixed, managed, and native, and now when I go and run it, we'll see that when I hit the filter button on the image, we're going to hit that breakpoint, and you can look at both your C++ side and your C# side. And then after this, I'll go to the slides and hand to Andrew. So we go on the image, we hit the filter button, and boom, we're in the breakpoint. And if I look at the call stack, you'll see here we have C++ at the top of stack where I am, the breakpoint, and then some external code. I've got just my code on, so we're hiding the uninteresting things. And then C# where we came from, which was this call over here. So you can step across these boundaries, hit breakpoints, inspect, and so on. So that's all I wanted to show you from a demo perspective. Was that a good use of your time? Did you learn some things? Yeah? Cool. So these are all the things we saw. I'm not going to take you through all of them again. I'm putting them up as reminders. You'll get the deck and you can look at them. They're just reminders in case you have questions. So if you have questions, you know, just throw them my way as I'm going through here on anything, not just on what's on the screen. So we saw this stuff. And we saw the call stack async. I didn't show, actually, the task window. See, here we've got a problem with the images hiding stuff. But the tasks window is also has support for async. So the call stack answers the question, how did I get here? The task window answers the question, what's in flight? So if you have these async operations you've queued and they haven't continued, and you're like, where are these things right now? You can open the task window and you can see a list of them. So check that out. We talked about visualizers and the JSON visualizer, about first chance exceptions, the data binding and how to turn on a breaking in code, the debug location tool, but definitely use that for your lifecycle and background tasks and so on. And then we looked at how to debug share contracts. In Silverlight, you have to enable tombstoning from the project properties. And here's a summary of that. I threw some other things in there, such as getting data tips from comments and debug break and run to cursor, some opportunistically, some other things, but that's basically that part. So with that, I do need to tell you for the next part that Andrew is going to take over. I think debugging is essential. You've got to make your app work. But in this day and age with store apps, performance is more important. It's not like when you have a departmental app or a web page and your users have to use it, and they tolerate the performance, and then they wait for the next version where you make it faster. With store apps, people will get your app just like this, and they can get rid of it just like that if it doesn't perform well. It's really important that your app performs well. Then you get a bad review, then you're not going to come back from that. And your idea, someone else is going to steal it and do it, or there's probably a competition already. So you really need to get the performance right from the beginning. It's more important in the store app age than what it was before. So I've shown you some debugger features. Andrew's going to show you something that you haven't used before store app development and phone app. So pay attention. This is really, really cool stuff. So,
awesome. Is this working? Sweet. So thank you, Daniel. As Daniel mentioned, we're going to go in and talk about performance tooling. So all right, so we're going to cover four different tools that we've shipped in Visual Studio 2013 in what we call Performance and Diagnostics Hub, since it's a XAML-based session. And those are memory, UI responsiveness, CPU usage, and energy consumption. Has anyone here used any of these tools yet? So two people. Awesome. So most of you are going to learn some stuff. And actually, the memory usage tool is brand new in Update 2. So I'm not sure if you guys have played with that yet or not, who have raised your hand that you've used some of these tools. So before we go into actually looking at the tools, let's talk about common performance problems. What are the things that you should measure for while you're actively developing? And the thing about performance is, a lot of times, if you measure early and measure often is the phrase that we use inside Microsoft, you can detect problems in your debugging sort of development environment without having to wait for people to complain, without really having to get production scale data. So measure early, measure often. If you know what to look for, a lot of times you can find some common pitfalls. So the first thing that we find that people deal with a lot, and this is a big problem in phone, is high memory usage forces your application to be terminated. If you come from a desktop environment, if your memory gets high, like high in like 2 gigabyte range, your app might run really bad, might impact the system, other apps might not run as well, but your application is going to run, it's just not going to run well. Well, on the phone, the operating system, depending on how much RAM is on the device, imposes a limit, and if your application goes over that, operating system is going to kill the application. And so in the case of memory, on the lower end devices, it's 180 megabytes. That's really not that much. You don't get an exception, you don't get a notification, your app goes over that, and all of a sudden it just disappears, the user has no idea what happened. And it's much easier than you might think to go over 180 megabytes. Another common problem that we hear people dealing with is UI not being responsive or choppy. If you think about when you're scrolling around in an app, you're panning, you're switching between different pages, if that feels choppy or jittery, it's really not a pleasant experience. It's actually one of the things that makes people feel like your application is high performance. There's two things that you talk about in performance. There's actual time and there's perceived time. And if the UI remains responsive, sometimes you can get away with longer running operations because people will be more tolerant if you put a spinner up and they can still kind of scroll around and they realize that something's going on. Where when the UI hangs, it's really only about a second or so before people start feeling like the application's unresponsive. Where you get more like 5 seconds based on research if you can actually make it responsive, even if you're waiting for an operation to complete. The other one is, we just talked about, operations taking a long time to complete. You know, you want your stuff to complete as fast as possible, but make sure that your UI remains responsive even when that's not possible. And then the other thing in the mobile world is applications draining the battery life out of devices. I'm sure everyone here who has a smartphone has installed some app at some time or another, and then all of a sudden, you know, 5 p.m. that day, your battery's dead, and you're going, what's going on? My phone usually lasts all day without a problem, and you realize that some application that you'd recently installed that's behaving poorly in the background. And people are eventually going to figure this out, and to Daniel's point about choice, they're just going to go uninstall your application. So correctness, you know, is obviously your application has to work before you put it in the store, but if you want good reviews right away, you also want to make sure that when people first try the V1, that it sort of meets all of these things. It feels responsive, it's fast, it's fluid, it doesn't randomly disappear, because memory can appear as a crash to your users. And then the other big thing that we talk about is, when you're in a profile with release build on a physical device, not sure how much familiar you are, but when you do a debug build, the compiler basically makes a lot of decisions to make sure things are debuggable, but it trades off performance for that. So for example, it won't inline things. It inserts extra no-op operations so the debugger can stop in all the right places. It actually less aggressively garbage collects things to make sure things are still around for the debugger. Whereas on a release build, it just says, okay, we're not worrying about debugging. We're just going to pre-optimize all of this stuff. We're going to inline. And actually on a phone, when you're doing it on a physical device, it pre-compiles it. You're not actually jitting the code like you would be in the emulator. So it's going to change the performance characteristics in some cases of your application. So let's jump in and take a look at some of the tools. So I'm going to be picking up with the same application that Daniel just used. And except I happen to have a Nokia Lumia right here. It's tethered, and you can see what's going on that projection. And so the first thing I want to do is I just want to go into this application. I'm going to switch over to make sure that I'm using my device. I need to make sure that my build configuration is correct, that I'm actually going to be using ARM instead of x86, since this is an ARM processor. And so let's just go ahead and say debug, start without debugging, and let's see what happens. Remember, I've moved over to a physical device. This is actually a friend of mine's Lumia. He has a lot of pictures on here. He's sort of a hobby photographer. It's the same person that developed the application. And the application is going to fire up. We're going to sit here and watch it spin for a little bit. So already, obviously, we have a problem. We've simply moved from the emulator that Daniel was showing, where it's running in on your physical machine's processor, to an ARM processor. And you can see how much slower that was. And the other thing is, the photo library is actually quite full, you can see. And notice that my app, it just disappeared. And so the question is, what's happening with that? Why did the app just disappear? Remember I mentioned memory sometimes causes problems. There's a lot of images on there. So did I do something wrong? First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the Performance and Diagnostics Hub. And Daniel mentioned this. But the Diagnostics Hub is the one place that you can find all of the performance tools. As we ship them, they will just continue to show up here. And the other great thing about the Hub is it's context sensitive. It knows what type of project you have. We have this option that says show all tools. And you can see down here the tools that don't apply. So we have HTML, JavaScript tools that are showing up down here as not applicable. And so, for example, if I were to have a JavaScript project open, only the tools that apply to JavaScript would show up here. So you can come in, and right away, you can see what tools are available. And if you go install Visual Studio Update, we've added a tool. All of a sudden, boom, they pop up here. So you just need to know one place to go look, and you'll be able to find all of your tools. So my hypothesis is that maybe this is a memory problem, since the application just started up and then randomly disappeared, and we knew that it was working correctly in Daniel. So I'm going to choose the memory tool. You'll see the settings link here. And there's two things. Sorry, this text is a little small. But I have a couple options for memory. I can choose managed only, I can choose native only, or I can choose mixed, which means it's going to collect managed and native information. At the moment, the only thing I'm doing in this application in the startup path is manage code. But if you've been to other talks on the XAML framework, the XAML framework itself is actually native. So there's certain things I can do in my managed code that result in native data being collected under the covers. So I'm going to go ahead and choose mixed for the purposes of this. I'm going to say OK. We'll say start. You see the page is telling me that we're starting the diagnostic session. And it's deploying my application. And now it should be starting up. And let's watch this memory graph as we go here while it's spinning. So you can see I have a live graph showing me what my memory is doing. And I can see it's climbing, 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 climbing. And yep, it got across that red line. And I mentioned that 180 megabyte mark. You can see here that I can choose that. I can set it higher if I was doing a higher-end game that I wanted to require higher-end hardware. But in most cases, we expect that you want to make it target all applications. And you can see my application actually died. So I'm going to go ahead and click stop. And while that's so what I want to do now is I want to rerun the profiler. And as that thing is climbing, I want to just go ahead and click that take snapshot button that was there. So this is going to take a little bit to complete. So I've pre-collected one of those. But all I did in that case was basically as it was climbing, once it got about halfway up to that 180 megabyte mark, I clicked take snapshot so I can see what's going on. So this is what an analyzed memory report looks like after I've collected it and I've taken one snapshot. And you can see I have two things. I have a managed heap view, and I have a heap view, which represents the native memory that was collected. And I can see the managed heap really isn't that big. It's only 122 kilobytes. There's only about 2,000 objects that were present in the managed heap at the time that I took the snapshot. But as it was climbing up this graph, I can see that there was actually 22 megabytes of native memory already allocated at the time I clicked the snapshot. So that gives me a clue that maybe the problem is my native memory. So I'm going to go ahead and click on the allocations view. And you can see I have sort of this view here. It's showing me where all of my memory is being allocated in my application. And so I can see that it's going to show me the function names that are allocating it. And wow, right away, in the size bytes, I see 14 megabytes of this 23 megabytes. So if I sort, you'll see it'll float to the top, is in this fetch picture. So what is move next? And so as I drill down, this is the stack that resulted in that being called. So I know in my application, if I were to switch back to it, that fetch picture is in this image item folder. So let's go ahead and find it in here. And so let's look at how I'm loading my images into memory. And so I can see I'm just basically reading in the raw image. It was a Nokia. Nokia has a really high megapixel resolution. So when Daniel was playing with the application on the emulator, you know, he'd taken some fake pictures. You can actually use the camera and you just get those colored bars, but they're not that high resolution. So on the Nokia, where I have a 40 megapixel camera, these images are huge, and I'm reading in the full image into memory. So it doesn't take that many of a full image in memory to blow up my application. Fortunately, the operating system provides me a solution to this, and I can use a thumbnail instead of loading the full image in. So there's actually just an API built onto the file type that says get thumbnail async. So instead of reading my file, just doing an open async, I'm going to say get thumbnail async. I'm going to load the thumbnail into the phone. So let's go ahead and launch performance diagnostics. Let's choose our memory again. And so let's go ahead. For the purposes of performance, this is going to collect a lot of data, so I'm going to go ahead and switch to managed only. I've pre-collected one with the native data. So native, you're collecting every time memory is allocated or deallocated. We record that information. So it definitely impacts the performance of the application while you're actually trying to run it. So it's something that's good to run on, but for the purposes of the demo, we'll just look at my pre-recorded one. And so let's see if my application starts up successfully this time. Stuff came up. Awesome. So at least we are successfully getting information from the disk. And so now the next question, and you can see on the graph over here that we're not running too hot on our memory. We're below halfway, even though we've loaded a lot of full images into memory. So awesome. That means that everything's successfully working. So the next question is, as I use my application, how is my memory working, right? Is it going to leak, or is it going to stay pretty steady? So let's go over to this page. Let's run this filter operation that Daniel mentioned. Let's navigate back. And wow, I can see that my memory really shot up. And when I came back, it never came back down to originally where I started. But I would actually expect navigating to a page, just doing something on that page, and coming back to have been a memory neutral operation. So let's click Take Snapshot. Let's navigate back over. Let's filter. Let's navigate back. And let's take another snapshot. So we're going to go ahead and stop our profiling session. And while that data is coming back, we'll look at the pre-recorded file that I've looked at. And so I can see that I have the two snapshots that we collected there. And I can see the memory went up. It never came back down. So the first thing if I click down here, it's going to show me a diff experience. So when I come into the view, you saw what it looked like before in the native world. But now I have extra columns. I have everywhere I had a column, I have count. But I have count diff. I can see what's actually increased between the snapshots. I have size, who's taking up size, size diff, and then inclusive size is this concept of how much memory are you holding alive. So managed .NET is garbage collected runtime, and most of you, I'm sure, know how the garbage collector works, is if nobody's holding a reference to it, it can clean it up. If you're accidentally holding a reference to it, it says this object's still being used, so it's not going to be collected. And then the inclusive size is the concept of how much memory is this object holding alive. So a lot of times you have an object that you're leaking, and it parents a bunch of other objects, so all you have to do is break that reference in the top-level object, and then all of its children are going to be collected as well. So in this view, you notice that here this info bar says view settings, filters are applied, just my code and collapse small objects. And I'm not seeing a lot here, so let's go ahead and turn off collapse small objects and see what it shows me. And so let's find stuff in my app. So let's call it filter, because my app's photo filter. And let's sort by count diff. And I can see that I have some image items floating around. I can see that I have my image items, and there should be a page in here. And I have an image page. And so notice when I select the image page is the one we navigated to. I wouldn't expect that to still be alive when I came back to the main page. So I have this two things in the bottom. I have a paths to root view. This is showing me what's referencing this object prevented from being garbage collected. And then I have a reference types view that shows me what this page is holding alive. So this down here is what makes up the inclusive size. And I can see this is holding about 5 megabytes alive. And then the paths to root shows me what's preventing it from being garbage collected. And I can see that there's a Windows size changed event handler that I subscribed to when I loaded this page. So if I were to go back to my application in my image page, I'm not going to save that one that we collected, I could do a search for where I'm subscribing, and sure enough, here's the window size page. So I could figure out a way to work around that, or the alternative is when I navigate away from the page, I'll go ahead and uncomment this. I'm just going to unsubscribe from that event handler, and so hopefully clean up that leak. And little another tidbit for you, Control K, Control U uncomments things in Visual Studio. Control K, Control C comments things. So that's actually a keyboard shortcut that I use all the time if you weren't aware of that. So let's go back to here where we were looking at this. Let's go to the native heap. We saw our memory grew a lot, and that image page only said that it was holding 5 megabytes alive. And when I look through the types of what's allocating memory, I can see that this move next. So this is where we were loading the images before, if you remember, that's allocating memory. And then I have this antique image. That's what gets called when I do the button click that says filter image. So there you go, the async button click. Well, why would just having filtered an image resulted in memory that was allocated but never deallocated? So let's go back and look at my C++ code that we Daniel briefly showed you before. Let's go to this image filter.cpp, and I can see that this antique image function's allocating memory that isn't getting cleaned up. And so if I look, if I follow the logic through, I can see I'm allocating this pixel buffer that I use down here in this array, but before I return from my function, I'm never actually cleaning up that in native memory. So, you know, it's magic how Daniel and I just, you know, code magically fixes itself by uncommenting things. But I can see based on the tool that I had allocated stuff I never cleaned up. So this should go ahead and fix that. So let's go ahead and just launch one more time, watch our memory graph to see how the graph behaves when we're using the application now. It's going to take a little bit to build now because it has to rebuild that native library as well. So it's going to go ahead and load up. And the next thing we're going to go figure out how to do is how to make this load faster, because this is kind of painful, but it has to stay alive first. So let's go ahead and come over here. Let's filter. See, my memory goes up. Let's go back. And I can see that the memory is coming back down to much closer to where it was before I navigated to the page where it went up. One thing to note in a garbage collected runtime and sort of when you're working in the XAML framework, until you've run it for a while, you may see some random fluctuations here and there because the framework does a lot of caching and stuff. So until you get those caches warm, you may not see perfect memory, but you're going to at least see some. So awesome. We've now fixed our memory leak. So any questions on that tooling? So the question was, could I have used decode image width instead of the thumbnail? I could have assigned it to a smaller image. Yes, I could have done. Yes, I could have force scaled it instead of getting the thumbnail. That would have been an alternative approach. So what did we just talk about? We talked about the Performance and Diagnostics Hub as a starting point for performance investigations. This only applies to your XAML applications, as Daniel mentioned. It doesn't apply to the old Phone 8 Silverlight applications. And then we talked about using the memory usage tool to monitor memory and look at snapshots. So, you know, where I was kind of just looking at the graph there, when I talk about measuring early and measuring often, that's something that you potentially have the opportunity to do without really even having to go to a device and physically, you know, say, okay, now I have a lot of really big images. I can just look at the graph as I'm kind of playing with the application. Yes. So the question was, are we going to bring any of these tools to Silverlight 8.1 apps? It's not currently on the radar. We have a site called User Voice. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. People can go file suggestions. We do try to prioritize, lets the community vote on sort of what's important to them. So if that's important to you, feel free to go create a item on User Voice, and then other people can vote, and we can see sort of how much traction that gets. But at the moment, we're trying to encourage people to move to the XAML-based stack. And so what Silverlight 8.1 does is it basically brings some of that functionality so you can start adding new stuff that'll apply if you then move over to the full XAML stack in the future. So, and then we talked about how to open snapshots, how to look at where my memory was, counts, reference graphs, and how to compare snapshots to view, figure out what we were leaking. All right, so most of you are probably suffering with me while we were starting the application, that it was starting pretty slow. So let's go figure out if we can improve the starting performance of the application. So I'm going to go ahead and come back to debug, performance, and diagnostics. And notice that this is a checkbox metaphor in here. So some tools, like the memory tool, can't be run with other tools. And one of the reasons is because it's so high impact. You notice that I basically said I'm not even going to collect native data for the purposes of this because it slows down the application too much. But some other tools are pretty lightweight. So CPU usage, energy consumption, and XAML UI responsiveness are examples of tools that can all be run at the same time. So you can basically run these tools, go fire up your application, see what it's doing, and then look at ways to optimize the performance of your application. So let's go ahead and start all of these tools now with our newly fixed application. So it's going to fire up. It's going to start. It's going to be slow. But that's OK, because we're measuring why it's slow. So we can go fix it now. And so you can see the CPU is kind of going up and down. It's a dual-core phone. So you can see I'm actually hovering up, spiking up to 50% in some cases. And that's the result of the fact that that means I'm actually pegging one core for some of these things. What's going on here is it's downloading these images from a server. It's running on my machine, but they're still pretty big images. So we're going to go ahead and, while that is completing, let's go dig into a previously collected UI responsiveness report. And so this one has just the CPU and the XAML UI responsiveness tools turned on. And so what I'm seeing here is I'm seeing now some swim lanes that are showing me what we call key performance indicators, or KPIs. You'll hear about that in performance a lot. And so one of the things is it's showing me the visual throughput of my application, so I can see the frame rate. I can see what the XAML framework is doing in this top app. And then down below, if I scroll down, I just have a CPU chart that I was seeing live while I was using my application. So where my CPU is really high, I can see that the XAML framework is doing a lot of work laying out my application. And in fact, that application takes about, if I were to drag these things, over 6 seconds about to lay out the application. And so down here, I can see the elements, that how long it took to lay out those elements. And so I can see this XAML control is taking 5.88 seconds to draw all these XAML items. So that's actually a long time. We're sitting there for almost 6 seconds while it's laying these things out. And so let me follow the hot path down. This one's obviously only taking 200 milliseconds, so let's look. Let's keep drilling to see where all of our time is going. And now you can see that my list box has exploded and I'm drawing a huge list of elements. None of them take a particularly long time to draw in and of themselves, but in aggregate, they're taking a long time to draw. So the question I now want to ask is, why am I spending all of this UI time to draw these elements? Clearly, when you go look at the phone screen, you know, there's only about 5 or 6 that can actually fit on the screen at any given point in time. So if I look at this, I can see that it's a group item that is taking the time to draw. And so if I go do a little bit of searching on the internet, it's a common problem that we find people hit all the time, is when you turn on grouping in data binding list view, it's going to break UI virtualization. UI virtualization means that it's only going to take the time to draw the stuff that fits on the screen instead of pre-drawing everything, you know, even if it's, you know, way down here and the user may never even scroll down there. So the other thing that I mentioned is we have this CPU usage tool, and so I can go into the CPU usage tool and I can see what pieces of code are using the CPU. And in this case, we have a feature called Just My Code. It's like the debugger Just My Code that's on by default. I can see that most of the time is spent in external code. If I want to turn that off, I can go ahead and turn that off, say show external code. And when I drill in, I would actually see, if I follow the hot path, that indeed it's pretty much the windows.ui.xaml.dll spending all that time. So I'm pretty confident that I don't have a CPU problem in my application. Notice that when I had Just My Code on, I do see my code, and I can see that, you know, the getting photos is only about 10% of the CPU time. So it's not really worth going and spending a lot of time optimizing there. And this is why we say measure early, measure often. Because a lot of times you might have said, oh, well, maybe I have a bug in the way that I'm loading the images, and let me go spend a lot of time optimizing that. And you might have spent a lot of time trying to optimize your code, and you might have gone from 9.91% to like 7%, and you really haven't made a big difference in performance of the application. So let's go ahead and stop this one that's running now on that. So first thing that we're going to do is we're going to go turn off grouping in our application. So let's go ahead to mainpage.xaml.cs, and magically we're going to simply change a Boolean from grouping to false. And all that's going to do is down here, instead of saying is grouped is true, and then in my link query you can see I'm actually grouping by something, I'm just going to do a standard link query on my set of images, and I'm going to set the is source group property to false. And so that should fix the grouping problem. Let's look at what other things we can improve in this application before we are doing this. So the other thing that I've done is you notice these marks are appearing up here on the timeline. Sorry, they're not rendering quite correctly with the font size that I have chosen. But I have the ability in my code to do something called, there's a logging channel, so I can write things out that will show up on this timeline. And so I've added instrumentation to my code where when I hover here, for example, it tells me that I'm in downloading images from the server, I'm begin downloading images from the server, and then here I can see I'm begin loading images from the camera. And if you notice that the order that those are occurring in, they're occurring serially in my application. But there's no reason why with tasks I can't be downloading images from the server at the same time that I'm loading images off the camera roll. So let's go back to the application. And notice here that I'm awaiting on get images from the server. Daniel talked about await previously, but let's go ahead and create a task here. And let's say get images from the server. That's going to assign a task, and then after we've finished loading from the camera roll, now let's await on that task. So that should build, and it should be happy about that. Excellent. And so then the final thing that I want to look at while we're here is I'm going to go ahead and look at the energy report. We notice we turned on the energy tool as well. And every time I'm navigating back and forth between my pages, you can see I'm going and re-downloading those big images from the server. Remember I mentioned that we weren't seeing them show up right away because it was downloading them from the server. And you can see that the energy tool is telling me the estimated energy usage. This is a software model, but it's telling me that 43% of the power of my application is being dedicated to just using the wireless radios on the device to go download these images from the server every time I navigate back and forth between the image pages. So not only is it slow, but in fact, it's actually draining the battery for my users. So can I get a better experience for my users if I say, I'm just going to do this in a quick way and make this a static variable. So I'm going to say static. So now, basically, once it's been initialized once in the application, it's going to say if the image is equals null, let's initialize it, and let's go load images. If it has already been initialized, because the application's been loaded, it's never going to initialize again. We're never going to go download the images, never process the images again. We're just going to hold those in memory. So let's go ahead and debug, or run our performance and diagnostics again. Let's see if we've improved the performance of our application at all. One, two, three, boom, and we're up. So we actually started significantly faster in this case. And then as I navigate around and I navigate back, I'm not going to worry about the server being slow. Notice it actually comes back up much quicker when I navigate back. And then if we're to go look at the reports, this is the UI responsiveness report after we fixed the virtualization issue. And you can see that I've gone from spending almost 6 seconds drawing those images to taking less than a second, only 602 milliseconds total to draw those by just changing a property. So I was using virtualization. I'll mention briefly that talking about the measure early, measure often, you can find that virtualization isn't working by just running this tool without waiting for it to be a performance problem. We have actually, in more than one case in Visual Studio ourselves, run into cases where we discovered after we built a feature, something we did in the design of the feature has resulted in not being virtualized, and then we have to go back to the drawing board and redesign it to work around that problem. So finding it early will save you time as well, so you don't have to think about how to relay out your control after you've spent a bunch of time writing it in a way that assumes you're going to rely on grouping, for example. And then the final thing is, by fixing the fact that we're not downloading the images from the server every time, you can see I've gone from where I was using about 50% of the energy of the app was dedicated to the network. In this case, only 28% was dedicated. And the longer I ran the app, the smaller that would become, because I'm never going to actually use the wireless radios again. Doing wireless network communication is actually one of those expensive things you can do from a power perspective. But you don't have to guess. You don't have to think about it. You can run a tool. You can measure it. You can actually understand what's going on in your application. So you can know what to optimize rather than just thinking about it. So, awesome. So what did we talk about? We talked about the CPU usage tool and the XAML UI responsiveness tool. I showed that you could run them together. I failed to mention at that point in time that that is new to update 2. When we shipped Visual Studio 2013 RTM, we had the checkboxes there, but you can only ever select one at a time. We've done the work in the tools to now make those tools work together. We talked about energy consumption, how it's going to do a software model, but it's going to show you sort of what the resources in your application are that are using the CPU. And thank you very much for an in-depth information on everything we covered. We blog about all the features that we do, so there's a blog entry on this link for every feature that you have seen today, and a couple related sessions that we did or that were done at the talk conference. If you want to go watch those, there's an automated testing of XAML-based Windows Phone applications. They'll talk about how to test your apps. And then Daniel on Monday did a debugging tips and tricks, which was over 60 tips on just ways to be more productive in the debugger. So thank you very much. And please go fill out an evaluation. I've heard rumor that the higher the score you give, the more chances you get to win an Xbox. So just keep that in mind. And I believe we heard that actually this QR code isn't working, so I think you'll have to go to the session builder to actually access the evaluation link. So there are 52 seconds left, and we'll be up here in the front if you have questions as well. So thank you very much.